a lesson on kindness, and we need more of it, and I think it's highly underrated in our society. If you, and this is because teenage girls are flippant and not very substantial, but if you were to tell a young girl, oh, you should go out with so-and-so, he's so kind, she'd go, okay. I mean, because we don't value it very much. At least we don't talk about the value of being kind to one another. So I have a little, in my field, we call it a little pretest. It's not a test. Nobody's going to look at it but you. And it went in kind of crooked, so that's a little lopsided there. But I want us to all think about kindness in a very concrete, substantive way. Because I know that we have a whole group of very kind people here. But I think it's always important for us to kind of review, think about that, think about what we're doing. So just kind of glance through that. And these are just some ideas of things that show kindness. But then there are some blank ones. And sometime today, you can fill out the blank ones. I'm going to leave you for a second while I go through that, and I'll run and make Emily a copy.
I'll be right back.
Okay. Anybody have any comments they'd like to make about that? And like I said, those are just some random ideas of things I know we all already do. I just think sometimes it's a good idea to concentrate things on a form and look at it and say, I could do more of that. I know that the physical good deeds, I could certainly do more of those myself. You know, we tend to get caught up in our own world and we get busy and we forget that there are things we could be doing for other people. Anybody have any suggestions, any ideas? You don't have to tell me what you write specifically for you.
Babysitting.
Didn't
cost me anything, and it helped her out a lot.
Right, right. It's a real act of kindness.
Sometimes we're reluctant to accept it, though. I mean, you say something to people, and, oh, I don't need anything. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to impose on them, but
right.
You want to do something.
And how do you feel about that? Is that what we should do as Christians?
As we're...
I have a tendency, if I'm going to do something for somebody, I'll say to them, I am going to... And they'll say, you don't need to do that. And I'll say, yes, I do.
Yes, I do. I do.
It's very
Debbie, do you have
I take my neighbor to work in school, and she calls. And we continually invite her, and she'll say, oh, we need to...
And you never know when that seed will sprout. Yvonne?
That was my subject. Oh, cooking for someone is very difficult now because so many people have their own specific things they eat, and you don't know what to take.
I take it's
just
there.
You just take it if
I just
they don't
take
want it.
If they don't like it, they can throw it away, and they won't tell me. So you know,
yeah.
It's okay.
Well, that's true.
Because I can only do what I can do. Now, if I know somebody has a specific allergy, of course I'll avoid that. But I kind of go back to that gift horse thing. You know, somebody's bringing you something, you should be gracious and just
sometimes you just show your face.
Right.
Problem of some sort. Just show up and
yeah,
your friend.
Mm-hmm. Just let them know you're there. But I think, like you said, Mother, we have to actually follow through with that. Not just say, if you need something, call me. I think we need to be much more specific because most people don't want to say, well, what I really need is for somebody to come mow the lawn. You know, they don't want to do that because we feel like we're imposing on someone else when really...
But you can see the lawn, can't you?
Right.
You know what needs
right. So you can see what needs to happen. And like you, I have found that the best way to do something, particularly one of the really big advantages of being a little bit older, is to be able to say, here's what I'm going to do. And no, you don't get to argue with me. You can't pull that off too much at Emily's age, but you can a little later.
She can drive me.
So anyway, I want us to think about kindness. And with that, I threw in compassion and good works because I think they're all bound together.
Another thing, a person who's receiving should receive it graciously.
Right.
And not say, oh, you shouldn't do that. And I'm going to tell them Laura. She was crippled up one time with her foot, I think. What happened to her? Anyway, she was laid up in bed, and I went to her house. I assume I took a dish, I don't know. But I went in her kitchen and cleaned it up. She kept all of, oh, don't do that, don't do that. She couldn't even stand on her foot.
Well, here's something you should know. If my mother comes into your house, other than just being invited for dinner, she's going to clean. She just is.
The day that she did that, though, I was having surgery, and I wasn't supposed to go until later, and mm-hmm. they called me, like, at 6 o'clock in the morning and said, he bumped me, got me in the first one. My kitchen was a nightmare. And I came home after having surgery. I was in and out of, and I'd wake up, and I would just feel horrible, and then I'd fall back asleep. Because she cleaned my whole kitchen.
Which is a nice thing.
It was a very nice thing.
And everybody benefited.
Yes.
So,
but I remember, Sister couldn't hold it. Don't do the dishes.
I felt so bad.
So, we're going to go through some scriptures, and I did not put them up here, so I'll need people to read. And you have your handout, so you can see what's coming up. Emily, would you care to start us off in Colossians 3:12? I think we forget that kindness is a requirement. It's not optional. You can't be a Christian and be an unkind person. You can pretend to be a Christian and be an unkind person, but you can't actually be a follower of Christ if you're unkind. Okay, Colossians 3:12.
So as those who have been chosen of God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience.
Okay, so we're required. You can't be that person on the end of the block that nobody wants to see or talk to. You can't be that person and be a Christian. We're commanded. And even when Christ was having to reprimand people, he was kind. Now, there were times when he lost his temper. Well, I don't guess he lost his temper. He used his temper. But he was never unkind to someone. When you go back and read all those miracles and the people touching him and grabbing at his garments, he was never unkind. And we are required to be kind and compassionate. So, kindness to family. Why are we less kind to them than to others? We get comfortable and lazy.
They have to love you anyway.
Yeah, that's what we tell ourselves. And that can sure get ruined sometimes if we're unkind to one another. And I do think we take out our frustrations and our anger and we say, well, I'm just venting to them. Well, you do that enough times and even your family's not going to see you come in the door. So I think we have to probably make a special effort to be kind to our family members. Because it's so easy to just get in the habit of not. So what does the Bible say about it? Well, oops, went backwards. Well, we know Ruth. Ruth 3:10. Debbie, you want to read that?
Then he said, blessed are you of the Lord, my daughter, for you have shown more kindness at the end than at the beginning, and that you did not go after young men, whether rich or poor.
Okay, so who's saying that to her?
Naomi?
Maybe. So, to both, the only people we know that about were Naomi and Boaz. And she was kind and compassionate and humble to both of them. But to Naomi, she showed great kindness because she didn't leave. Her husband, Naomi's son, died, and she stayed with her mother-in-law rather than going back to her own people. And I've always found that really interesting. And the only thing I can come back to is Naomi was a child of God, and her character and her compassion and her kindness made her a better choice than going back to the people who were not children of God.
That was her teaching, too, when she was young, baby.
Right, right. Proverbs 31:26, Pat.
She opens her mouth with wisdom, and on her tongue is the law of kindness.
So that's an interesting turn of phrase. What's the law of kindness? What would you imagine? I don't think we can find something in the scripture that says, here's what law of kindness means. But how would you envision that?
I almost look at it as the golden rule. Treat others.
The golden rule? Treat others the way you'd like to be treated?
Nobody wants to be treated badly. Everybody wants to be treated with kindness.
And I think that the law of kindness means that comes first. You think about, yes, you need to reprimand, exhort, teach, guide. But you can always do it with kindness rather than with that haughty attitude that says, I'm right, you're wrong, nene. That's not who we should be as Christians. So in my mind, that's what we mean by the law of kindness. And so we demonstrate that to people by what? Give me a few examples.
Patience.
Patience. Oh my goodness, that's one I have to work on. I'm so not good with that. What else?
I was going to say listening, but I guess that kind of goes with patience, because a lot of times we immediately rebuttal.
Rebuke.
Yes, or get angry or upset or whatever, and we should just take it in for a while and think about it.
Really?
Really,
yes. If the shoe fits, wear it.
Yeah. And, you know, a long, long time ago when we talked about communication, something like people only hear the first 20% of the sentence before they're ready with their answer. And if you ever want to test that, just make up the end of a sentence somewhere. Most people won't notice that you said the frog was in the garden when you were talking about something real. So we need to listen all the way through and get to the point where we can be of help. If we're just reacting instead of listening and studying and determining what we want to say, we're not usually going to be very helpful. Oh, look, it's my mom.
Aw. Got on there.
It's Micah. Thank
you. Kind of baby.
Well, I really put it up there to show that throughout our lifetime we can show compassion and kindness, and we need to learn it. I think that's Micah. It's kind of hard to tell from here. But he doesn't know kindness at this point. He has to learn it. He has to be taught it. I'm talking about his being kind. He doesn't understand how to be kind because he's being taught kindness. And then when he's taught it, he will be able to exude. But, you know, he's not very kind right now because he doesn't care if you sleep. You know, it doesn't matter to him. But if he doesn't have kindness, then he won't learn it. It is not... I do think it's inherent in man's nature to be a kind person, but I think it has to be nurtured. I don't think it goes to the top of the list without nurturing.
And a kind person helps another person be kind.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. She knows this herself, that her father is a much more patient person than I. And she should have known me before I knew him.
Well, he is a more laid-back kind of guy than almost anybody I know except Roger. So,
except when he speaks, you listen.
Oh, my dad?
Yeah.
Very quiet.
He never had to say much to us as kids.
Probably just had to look at you.
Yeah. Or if he's in the car, he'd make a sound. Like, huh? And everybody's, okay, whatever.
And yet he never laid a hand on
it. One time,
because you ran from him.
Yeah, I ran away from him. Bad choice on my part. So we know that kindness can be added. It's not one of those things that we get to say, well, I'm just not that way. Well, better be. 2 Peter 1:7, Mary?
To God, godliness, brotherly kindness, and brotherly kindness, love.
So all those virtues that we're going to add. So I get really, really tired of people who say, well, that's just my nature. Well, as a Christian, we're supposed to have a whole new nature. We're supposed to put on Christ. So, you know, nobody gets away with saying it's not in me. It is. You have to bring it out. Cliffy, you want to do 1 Peter 3:8?
Finally, all of you be of one mind, having compassion for one another, love as brothers, be tender-hearted, be courteous.
My personal belief is, thank you, I know that was tough, you could have told me no, is that women tend to have more compassion than men just in their nature and our upbringing. We're taught from a very young age to be nurturers and take care of people and take care of the children. But what if we haven't grown that compassion? What if it feels awkward to us to be compassionate? Does that give us a buy? No. No.
Laura? For one thing, it's hard for one person. Something might be hard for another, but it doesn't excuse it.
Right. Right. Laura?
I learned a very valuable thing when my mom passed away. My dad, who was always was the rock of the family, I saw my father cry twice. That was it. You know, when my mom passed away, he broke. And since that, and it'll be 15 years already, but he's much more, he breaks easily. Mm-hmm. Like, he cannot go to a funeral. But I think to a certain extent, you know, we're raised in the world, boys don't cry, you know, that's how they used to be raised. So I think to a certain extent on that, it's stifled, because they were raised to go into the workplace, mm-hmm. to go into the, it's different. But yet, the women are in a lot of ways because they're home with the children. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always work out that way, but I think that a lot of times too, coming home, you know, like the man, perfect example, Jim said to me one day, which just dumbfounded me, and it was like 2 months ago, he had left his backpack. We had to bring his truck in, and we dropped it off. And he left his backpack in his truck, and he runs every day. And I said, well, I'll just go pick it up and bring it to you. And then Mr. Spaz goes, you would do that for me? And I thought, of course I would do that for you. But he was so surprised, and it almost insulted me that he said that. But I was like, you've been married to me for 30 years. You should know this. But it was funny because it's kind of...
That kind of goes back to our thing about the family. Sometimes we don't do everything we should do for our family members, and other times as family members we don't recognize what people are doing. I will say quite honestly that Roger is one of the most giving people I've ever known, and he's laid back and he's easygoing, and I have to be very careful that my bossy nature doesn't overwhelm him, doesn't take advantage of that good nature. An example, most of y'all know the house has been in an uproar because we had the flood in the dining room. We couldn't get that all fixed, and they had to redo the floor. And, you know, we've been adding this room. And, well, before Thanksgiving, the study has just had extra furniture stuffed in it. And, I mean, it's just a warehouse at this point. And I said, oh, I wish I could have that clean before Thanksgiving. I know we can't, but I wish we could so I could open that door. I said, but it's just our family, and if they don't like it, they can close their eyes. And it wasn't 3 minutes before I see him starting to cart stuff out of that room. I said, what are you doing? And he said, well, he wanted to get that room cleaned out. I said, no, I will put my little OCD nature on hold, and we're not going to do it. Because he has this building he's trying to finish, you know, but he was going to stop that and do this thing just because I said, oh, I wish I could do that. I have to be really careful because he is so accommodating. And I have to be even more careful to try to be about half as accommodating as he is, because it's not natural to me like it is to him. But I think we grow in that all the time. So, compassion is more than just feeling sorry for somebody. What else does compassion entail?
Putting yourself in their place.
Putting yourself in their place. And then consequently, what could you do to make it better? To just say, the Good Samaritan. Did the two that walked past before the Good Samaritan, did they actually have compassion? Even if they looked at that man and went, oh, wow, that's bad. That's not compassion. Because
they felt sorry for him.
Yeah, felt sorry for him, but they didn't do anything. So how do we show kindness and compassion? Well, I think it's through good works. Good works are the outward representation. Can we truly be kind without showing, without doing things? Do you think you can be a kind person if you never do any of those things?
You're in thought you are.
But not as nobody knows it if you are.
Does the Lord even know it? If you don't do anything, are you actually kind? Or are you just aware?
You know, you're just aware.
I think you're just aware. I think unless you put that thought into action, you're not kind. In fact, in some ways, you're more unkind because you're aware of something that needs to happen and you don't do it. So I think the people that just talk a good talk are not kind people because they don't evidence it with any actions. It's my opinion on the thing. X936. Whose turn is that? Mother, is that you? X936. I'm pretty sure you still have Acts.
At chapel there was a certain disciple named Tabitha, which is translated Dorcas. This one was full of good works and charitable deeds, which she did.
Okay, so I say Tabitha was a kind woman. And how do, by my definition, how do I know she was a kind woman?
What she did.
She gave of herself.
Because of what she did and gave. Now, just kind of an esoteric question. Is it possible to give and do those kinds of things and be unkind? Maybe. If you have a really
ulterior motive.
Yeah, if you have an ulterior motive, doing it for show, trying to make people think what a great guy you are, it's possible. I think it's less likely for most people who are doing these things. They're doing it to be kind and compassionate.
It usually comes to surface, though, like you're saying.
It usually does show up eventually. Yvonne, you want to read 1 John 3:17, and then Emily, would you do Jude?
But whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him?
Go ahead, Emily.
And have mercy on some who are doubting. Sorry.
I must have written something wrong. That's not it.
No, so idiot. It says compassion in my
heart. Oh, okay. Have compassion on some who are doubting. Okay. So the first part says, if you have a lot of worldly goods and you shut yourself off from your brother, there's no compassion there. Perhaps the trap we get into in our country with so much wealth is the idea of thinking, well, I'm not really wealthy. You know, I can't really share that much because I'm not wealthy. And we all are. Everybody in this room is wealthy compared to about 80% of the world's population. And the other thing is, we look at our brethren and know that they also live in this world that has a lot of material goods. And maybe we don't realize that things are tough right now for them, for whatever reason. Because most of us try to hide all that to a great extent. We don't want others to know. And maybe we don't want others to know because we're prideful, or maybe we don't want others to know because we don't want them to worry about us. You know, it's not necessarily an evil thing that you're keeping things to yourself. But when you need some help, you need to ask for help. Hard, hard, hard thing to do, I think. Not quite so hard if you want to say, could I get a ride to the doctor next week? You know, but if you're saying, you know, I'm really struggling right now with the bills. And I don't know, I actually personally don't know anybody that would come to me and say that. I'd like to think they would if they needed help, but I don't know anybody that would. I don't think. Because we all have this pride.
I do agree that I'm better off than a ton of people out there, but at the same time, it's the first year of marriage, you know,
right?
And I discovered, because I still want to help people, and I've discovered that a big issue that comes out with me is pride in that area, because if I can only help a little bit,
Then
I almost don't want to, because
yeah.
You're like, well, that's not going to be, compared to what everyone else is probably doing for these people, that's not very big, or you're afraid that they're going to judge you even or something. But I have a really good friend, and her dad had to have surgery, and her mom had pneumonia, and her dad might not have been able to go back to work for like 8 weeks. Mm. And I was like, okay, well, Rhonda, can we help them some? And I really thought about it. I wanted to send them a bunch of money, but I was like, I really can't afford to send them a bunch of money. So all I sent was a $20 bill. And she, her daughter, texted me and said, my mom got that money in the mail, and she just cried and cried. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
So it's really hard to put away the pride, but
it is.
It still helps.
And we do have to. We don't want to give until we can't take care of ourselves, because then that puts us in a position. But that's the widow's mite. You gave all you could. And that's more than most people do. And I would have cried too. So, I mean, it's just...
It's the thought behind it.
It's the idea that somebody understands your situation and is trying to help you.
It doesn't have to be money.
No, it does not have to be money.
A phone call. It could be a car. Mm-hmm. Or just a visit or whatever.
Yeah, see, you're looking at the envelope right there. The card. But what we're told here is, if we don't show compassion, the love of God isn't in us. Now that's pretty big, in my opinion, because I certainly want to exhibit the love of God through my life. How am I going to influence anyone if I don't do that? And charity, love, is a command. It's not optional. If you don't feel love, you have a failing, and you need to work on that. You can't accept that and say, well, I'm just not that kind of person. I'm just not lovey and emotional. You don't have to be emotional to show love if you're not the kind of person that's comfortable with physically showing emotion. That's not a requirement. The love is a requirement. And you cannot just say, well, that's how I am. Because... once again, becoming a Christian is supposed to transform us in all kinds of ways. So, where are we? Laura? 1 Corinthians 8:1.
Now concerning things offered to idols, we know that we all have knowledge. Knowledge puffs up, but love edifies.
Love edifies. That's an interesting statement. How does love edify? What does the word edify mean, first of all?
Build you up.
And teach. And even reproach, if necessary. So how does love edify? Laura?
I was going to say, if you use Emily's thing, the love that she gave to that woman had to be humbling on that other person's end. And that is an edification.
Right. That person learned a lesson. Even if they're the best person in the world, they learned that lesson again of sharing what you have, doing the best you can, always helping out. And frankly, whether it's $20 or $2,000 doesn't really matter. What matters is the love in your heart when you're doing this, or whether it's a pot of beans or a filet mignon, or, you know, the amount in our terms of the gift doesn't matter. It's the heart, the charity, the love that matters.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm kind of learning this with daughter-in-laws now or whatever. You know, sometimes you look at your kids and you look at, oh, you go, I can't believe they did that. But then you remember, okay, you did that when you were that age, and we tend to forget those things. Mm-hmm. But sometimes, too, it's letting them go through that thing, and the charity is being there for them. And there's other ways you can help. I mean, like with Mark and Sarah, they've got it kind of tight right now, but there's a certain part of me that wants to let them experience that, because that builds them. I can offer food and different things like that, and I'm always there for support, but I don't want to make it...
You can cripple somebody by helping too much.
You enable them, and then they never learn.
Yeah, you can cripple someone by... I'm not sure that's loving them too much. It's just not... because we're supposed to take care of ourselves. If you don't take care of your own, you're worse than an infidel.
And then they never learn to cope.
If you don't work, you don't eat. I mean, it's that balance between loving and caring and helping, and not crippling someone and making them dependent on you. Because one day you're going to die, and then what do? You know, it's not fair to your child to make them dependent on you as an adult. And, you know, when my kids were little, I probably told this before, but of course, Amy and Clay just couldn't wait to get out of the house. Whenever they were old enough, they were going to go. And Kate, till she was about 13, would say, no, I am never leaving. And then, of course, she got to be 15, and she couldn't wait to leave. But most kids, even early on, will say, when I'm grown up, but there are some kids that that just frightens too much, and maybe those are the ones you have to work. I had a professor one time tell me that Kate and I refused, and I said, you're probably right, but I did not do that on purpose. I'm not sure how to fix it. And then, of course, we're not going to read all through 1 Corinthians 13, but we know what love does. Most of us can recite that chapter. Love does so many things, and the greatest of all is
love.
If we feel true love in our heart for another human being, we're going to try to help them. Every time I come in, there's a man on the corner. I can't remember what street it is. It's as I'm turning to come in. And I think he lives in that retirement home right there on the corner, and he's holding a walker, and he's probably in his 70s, and he's saying this, you know, food, I want food. And I get so torn about that. I'm never in the right lane to give him anything because I'm ready to turn, and he's over there. But he's there every Wednesday morning. My assumption is he's there every morning. And I guess I just come back to he doesn't look homeless. He doesn't look like he's sleeping outside. You know, his clothes are pretty good. So why is he having to ask for food? And I wish I could just stop and talk to him and say, tell me what's going on. Tell me the story. Because I do have compassion if he actually needs food. On the other hand, I feel like this is his profession. Because he is there every Wednesday morning. And my guess is that if I were there on Tuesday morning, he'd be there as well. So I don't know how we react with that.
I read something about that one time, and I guess I've been a little leery since then, that it's kind of a group thing that they send them out, and they do that every day, and then they go in and
yeah.
do the money. So I don't know.
And again, it's if I give somebody $20 and they blow it, that's on them.
Right.
It's not on me.
You've still done the right thing.
And I would probably wind up giving him something, except I'm two lanes of traffic over, and he's in a walker, and I'm not going to jump out of the car. So, but it makes you stop and consider. We were going to Arlington one day last winter when it was so cold, and I happened to glance up, and it was sort of an overpass bridge, but it wasn't like a high flyover or anything. There were two tents under there, and people were living there. And I thought, what happens that you get to that point, you know?
That Lancaster Bridge that you go over, there used to be a whole
mm-hmm.
group of people in mm-hmm. camps. They didn't have to. The city has places.
Yeah. Downtown Dallas by the library is where a whole lot of homeless people hang out, because they can go in the library and people won't make them leave. And it's warm, and there are bathrooms. But there is, just across the street from it, a sleeping shelter. So they sleep in the shelter at night and spend the day in the library, which the librarians don't tend to mind unless they come in drunk. And they make them leave if they come in drunk. So 1 Corinthians 16, 14. Where are we? Debbie, are we at you?
Let all that you do be done with love.
Everything. All that you do. Everything that you plan, think, engage in has to be done with love. And if we use that as our guideline, I don't think we can go far wrong. If you're about to speak back to someone who's annoyed you, and you can stop and say, am I doing this with love? It's going to help. It's going to help that problem with the tongue. If someone has wronged you and you have to go talk to them, are you going to be able to do it with love and not vengeance? Because who does vengeance belong to? To whom does vengeance belong? God, not to us. First Timothy 6:18, Pat.
Let them do good, that they be rich in good works, ready to give, willing to share.
Ah. So do we have a greater responsibility if we're wealthy? I think so.
Probably have more opportunities.
You have more opportunities. You have more wealth that's not going to take away from your family. Mm-hmm. So I think, and I get on a rock and a hard place sometimes as I see young teenagers starting to work. And, you know, sometimes they're sitting by me or near me. And I never see anything go on the collection plate. And I want to say to them, at what point are you not responsible for giving back to the Lord? On the other hand, they may do it when I'm not seeing. And so it's a, I would like to be able to talk to some of them in a teaching way, but neither do I want to have them say, well, I do. You just didn't see it. You know, so I don't know where you get to on that. But I do think we need to work a little harder at teaching our young people about, you know, you're making a salary. You're earning money. You have been prospered. It's your turn to give back to the Lord.
We don't have many young people in here, but I remember when your children were little and they had your little allowance. You like, you got 50 cents, you could put a nickel in.
That's right.
That's right.
And I think we have to teach that all the way through. And, you know, I really think that parents are pretty good at that. But I think there's a disconnect somewhere when the children start earning money that the parents don't follow through with. Just because it's a small salary doesn't mean you're not obligated to give back to the Lord. And Amy has talked about this, and of course she's almost 30 now, but she's been talking about it for years, that she sees young people starting on their own. You know, they get an apartment, they get a house, they get whatever. And she said, as far as I can tell, they're not doing an offering. She said, and I want to talk to them about it, but it's not really, you know, it's between them and God. And she said, it's a difficult position to be in. Debbie?
No, I was just agreeing, yes. That's hard. That's something the preacher can mention from the pulpit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that yeah. they should hear, but sometimes...
And you don't want to get into other people's business. And it is their business with the Lord. But it's also a commandment, and if they're not doing what they should do, I want to help them. Not because I think they're... $20 or whatever will make the difference in us keeping the building open. It's for their good because we're told to lay by in store. So if anybody has a brilliant solution for that one, let me know. But as we are wealthy, we are admonished to do good works. We can't be the guy who's just going to tear down his barns and build bigger ones. What happened to him? Poof, gone. And that's how quickly ours can be gone. Now, let's see, where are we? 1 Timothy, Mary? 1 Timothy 2:10? I think this one's very interesting because it specifically speaks to women.
But which is proper for women professing godliness with good works?
So it's proper for us to profess godliness with our good works. Do you want to go ahead and read 5:10 as well? Thank you.
Well reported for good works if she has brought up children, if she has lodged strangers, if she has washed the saints' feet, if she has relieved the afflicted, if she has diligently followed every good work.
And those are the requirements to be considered a widow indeed and be enrolled for the church to care for her. But it says good works. It's part of it. And it's not, I don't think, good works in the last 30 days. It's a life of good works and caring. And perhaps, I like to think I'm a kind person. I like to think I care about people and do care for people, but I think lazy comes into play way too often. Yes, I'm going to do that at some point. Yes, I'm going to help at some point. Yes. And I think that's a failing. Something I need to work on, because women professing godliness must show good works. There's not an option. And is it an option because you're young to not do good works?
Yes, I know.
Is it an option to not do good works if you're single?
Doesn't matter what age you are.
No. It says women. Women who profess godliness are to do good works. And again, I think there's a disconnect as these young people are moving into adulthood, because perhaps they think, well, that $20 won't matter. Or if I just make a cake, that's no big deal. But it is a big deal. It's a big deal to the person receiving it, and it's a big deal to the person learning to profess good works. Titus 1, 15 through 16. Cliffy, do you want to not read, or do you want to go ahead and read? Okay.
To the pure, all things are pure, but to those who are defiled and unbelieving, nothing is pure, but even their mind and conscience are defiled. They profess to know God, but in works they deny Him, because abominable, disobedient, and disqualified for every good work.
So, I think we have to start thinking about the fact that just doing a good work is not enough. It has to be done in the right spirit, with the right heart. Titus 2, 7 and 3, 8. Yvonne, is that you?
Oh.
Or mother. That's, yeah, I switched on you. It's mother.
Titus
2, 7 and then 3, 8.
In all things, showing yourself to be a pattern of good works and doctrine, showing integrity, reverence, incorruptibility, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that one who is an opponent may be ashamed, having nothing evil to say of you.
If you're doing your good works, they can't fault you. Mother, and 3:8, Titus 3:8. Is that what that one was? 3:8.
Read 8. Want me to read that?
Please.
I'm not in touch. Oh, I turned on the next phrase. Sorry. This is the faithful saying, and these things I want you to affirm constantly, that those who have believed in God should be careful to maintain good works. These things are good and profitable to men.
So, they're good and profitable to us. You know, this is such a basic lesson, and the things that are said are just so, there's really no discussion point. It's profitable for men to do good works. Hebrews 10:24.
And let us consider one another in order to store up love and good works.
Okay, so the good works are encouraging to others. We're considering others. We're helping others maintain the kind of lifestyle that they also need to maintain. It would be pretty hard if you thought you were the only person doing those good works. I mean, human nature would want to say, well, nobody else is. Why should I? Well, you should, because God said so. But it is within us as humans to kind of go, well, that's not fair. Laura, 1 Peter 2:12.
Having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evil doers, they may, by your good works which they observe. Did I read that right?
Well, yeah. But what it's saying is, even in those in the world are going to see your good works and know. So that brings up an interesting point. The Pharisee who prayed on the street corner, he was told to go into his closet and pray so that others wouldn't, you know, he was doing it for the glory. But if the Gentiles are moved by the good works of the Christian, those can't all be hidden. How does that fit together?
Well, we shouldn't be doing our good works just for fellow Christians.
No.
Sometimes
exactly
our neighbors are in need too.
That's exactly it. The kindness should be throughout our lives and throughout the relationships. And by those good works, they know us.
It's a characteristic of being a Christian.
That's right. That's right.
I've always thought that I've heard that you never, ever pat yourself on your back for doing something, because if you do it, others will see it.
And they'll take care of it.
They'll take care of it.
Yeah. And if they see you patting yourself on your back, you've just blown your influence anyway. So good works aren't always good works. Does that make sense? We talked about it earlier. Without the love of God, they're not good, and they're in vain. So our good works are vain without obedience. Matthew 7, 21, would you read 21 and 22?
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven will enter. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, we did not prophesy in your name, and in your name, did we not prophesy in your name, and in your name cast out demons, and in your name perform many miracles.
That's right. Lord, we did all these things. We did them in your name. We're good people. Look at all the good works we did. And what does he say?
I don't know you.
I don't know you. You didn't do what I wanted you to do. You didn't do it with the love for me. You didn't follow my commandments. So that seems so clear to me. I have a hard time understanding when people don't understand. You know, because it's that old example we used to use, you know, if mom sends you to the grocery store for a loaf of bread and you come back with a loaf of bread and 15 other things, did you obey? No. Because you decided you'd get the loaf of bread in addition to what you wanted to do. But it was a sidebar, Laura.
You know, if you look at it, like with Paul, he thought he was doing good when he was killing Christians.
He did.
He thought he was doing good. And he really did.
He was saving the nation from this evil interloper. Yeah. So our thoughts don't tell us much. And
behold, I thought.
That's right. Behold, I thought. And Paul was an educated man, a wealthy man, a well-respected man. He was wrong. And in his error, he created a lot of problems for a lot of people, a lot of anguish, a lot of sorrow. So our good works are vain without obedience. If we're not doing what God wants us to do, it's not a good work. And that's just the simple fact of the matter.
The world today, or they think otherwise.
Oh, absolutely. But it's a good thing. And the ends justify the means. I actually had, at this last workshop I was presenting, there was a nun there, and she was 75, and she had retired from teaching, but now she said, I just try to help people, and she does some educational things. Well, she wanted to sell me a calendar, and because there were these battered women and the money was going to go to help. And it was all a good thing. But the end she said, when you fill this out, we'll put your name in a drawing and you can win $1,000. And I said, well, you know, I don't gamble, and that's gambling, and I'm not going to do that. And she was taken aback, and I wanted to say, come on, you're a nun. You should have thought about this.
But, as far as...
Oh, yeah. No, they like raffles, as far as I can tell. But a good work isn't a good work if it doesn't do what God said to do, no matter how much in our wisdom we think it did. So, you have three more spaces here. Now or later or sometime, think about three things you could do specifically for someone. Don't just say, I'm going to pray more for others. Think about a person who has a need and what you can do. And write it down. Writing it down is always a good thing.
I've got that many people on my street.
Right.
Saying I'm
right. Right.
We all need round two-its for Christmas.
We do need round two-its.
There's some guy that makes them round to it.
Yeah.
I'm an end in the mouth.
Yeah.
I used to have one.
If I could just get around to it.
Yes. Get around
it's a circle
around.
And it says to it. If I could get around to it. Emily's going, what?
Before your time, Emily.
Questions, comments?